und herzlich willkommen zur niegelnagelneuesten Ausgabe des Telestammtisch. Das ist Ausgabe 61 und ich habe mir hier im Rahmen der Comicjade mal anders den Alexis Fariado geschnappt. Der Lex, wie ihn seine besten Freunde nennen, ist jemand, der ist Editorial Director bei den Charles M. Schulz Studios. Das sind die, die aktuell die Peanuts Comics schaffen und veröffentlichen und hast du nicht gesehen. Da ist er halt der super mega Chef und so. Und außerdem hat er da auch schon Eisen Award für was gewonnen. Dann hat er unter anderem auch eine eigene Reihe, Kid Beowulf. Und in einer perfekten Corona-freien Welt wäre er eigentlich bei der Comicjade unterwegs gewesen. Dort hätte ich ihn eigentlich interviewt. Und nun fand die Comicjade aber online, digital quasi statt und trug den Namen Comicjade mal anders. Wir haben uns also im großen, weiten Internet getroffen und einen Videocall gemacht. Den habe ich aufgezeichnet und der ist im Rahmen des Programms der Comicjade entstanden. Comicjade kennt man vielleicht, ist so ein bisschen, wie so, wenn man so will, eine kleine Version des Comic-Festivals oder des Comic-Salons. Total toll. Schaut da mal rein. Es gibt noch eine Menge von den ja, Programmpunkten, die es dort gab, auch weiterhin auf dem YouTube-Kanal der Comicjade online. Schaut da also mal. Ihr kriegt von mir dieses Künstlergespräch jetzt nun hier nochmal als Podcast serviert mit einem total fantastischen Englisch. Wie ihr euch sicherlich denken könnt und das, naja, hört da einfach gekonnt drüber hinweg. Ich glaube, das Gespräch ist grundsätzlich sehr gut geworden und den größten Redeanteil hat der Lex schließlich. Ihr kriegt das von mir also nicht auf YouTube geladen und ja, das ist, glaube ich, alles, was ich noch sagen möchte. Ihr könnt euch darauf einstellen, dass hier in den nächsten Monaten vermehrt diese KünstlerInnen-Gespräche stattfinden werden. Ich habe eine ganze Menge tolle, vor allem jetzt auch deutschsprachige Interviews schon in Planung. Da gibt es eine Menge aktuelle Veröffentlichungen und ich habe hier eine Menge Leute, die Bock haben, mit mir über ihre Arbeit und über Comics zu sprechen. Das werden wir tun. Freut euch drauf. Es wird ein Traum. Jo Leute, ihr könnt auch gerne wieder Feedback hinterlassen. Das wäre immer total toll. Würde mich sehr freuen, wenn ihr auf den Social Media Plattformen eures Vertrauens oder eben auch gerne via Mail an info@tele-stammtisch.de einfach mal schreiben wollt, wie euch dieser Podcast hier gefällt. Wie findet ihr es, dass ihr jetzt aktuell mehr von diesen ja, Künstlergesprächen auf die Ohren bekommt. Das würde mich alles mal sehr interessieren. Schreibt doch mal. Habt ihr vielleicht Leute, die ich mir unbedingt mal vornehmen sollte? Habt ihr da Tipps und Empfehlungen? Gerne auch englischsprachig. Ich im gewissen Rahmen kriege ich da ein Gespräch auf die Reihe. Wäre alles voll gut zu wissen. Und nun also viel Spaß beim Gespräch mit Alexis E. Fariado. Ciao. Hallo und herzlich willkommen hier zum Künstlergespräch bei der Comicjade mal anders. Ich bin der Andi, der Typ, den ihr gegebenenfalls von der ein oder anderen Live-Veranstaltung bereits als Moderator kennt oder vom Podcast der Telestammtisch. Und auch heute habe ich die Gelegenheit, hier jemanden ja vom Mikro zu begrüßen über das Internet zugeschaltet. Einen großen Künstler, mit dem ich schon immer mal sprechen wollte, weil er ganz tolle Arbeit macht und ich bin doch sehr froh, dass er heute da ist. Die Comicjade findet in diesem Jahr, wie ihr alle wisst, digital statt. Das heißt also nicht so ganz so vor Ort in Aachen und ich denke aber schon, dass wir es geschafft haben, in diesem Jahr ein ganz tolles Programm auf die Beine zu stellen, neben ganz tollen auch Signiermöglichkeiten, die es gibt oder eben auch direkt in Aachen vor Ort euch, wenn man so will, ja, auf Distanz Dinge anzuschauen, gibt's auch ein ganz tolles Online-Programm. Und ich bin wirklich sehr froh, heute jemanden hier zu begrüßen, mit dem ich ab sofort quasi auf Englisch reden werde. Und wie ihr euch das vielleicht vorstellen könnt, ist englische Sprache, die habe ich ganz viel in der Schule gesprochen, aber es ist nicht perfekt. Für ein tolles Gespräch dieser Art wird's reichen. Und ich bin mir sicher, dass wir hier, ja, auf eine ganze Menge, ganz viele tolle Sachen uns freuen können. Es ist mir eine wahre Freude, heute jemanden begrüßen zu dürfen, den wir, also er ist ein Er hat den Eisen Award gewonnen. Er ist unter anderem auch aktiv im Studio von dem Charles M. Schulz Studio. Was genau das ist und was es mit den Peanuts zu tun hat, wird er uns auch noch sagen. Und vor allem auch wird er uns heute seine eigene Comic-Reihe Kid Beowulf vorstellen. Ich bin sehr gespannt, was heute passiert. Hello and welcome, Alex E. Fariado.
Hello, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
It's a great pleasure for me, for the whole German audience, and we are very looking forward for this interview. And first of all, how are you? You're somewhere in Santa Rosa. Santa Rosa. What's up in Santa Rosa?
So Santa Rosa is in California. We're just about an hour north of San Francisco. Right now it's beautiful and sunny, and it's actually the home where Charles M. Schulz lives. And his studio is here in the Schulz Museum and so it's the place where I live currently, since part of my life is at the Charles M. Schulz studio. So I don't know how you are in Germany for commutes, but in the Bay Area they can be awful driving to and from the workplace. So when I got the job, I moved from San Francisco up to Santa Rosa, because I didn't want to spend my life in the car. This is where I've been for the last 15 years or so. I think. Yes, something like that. My memory is hazy. I've been here too long. But it's lovely, and I'm in my studio, and I'm, as I said, I'm very happy to chat with you.
So that means you're looking to the sea? Are you close to the sea, aren't you?
Yeah, we're not far. There, I could hop into my car and drive 40 minutes and hit what we call Bodega Bay, which is right, leads right to the Pacific Ocean, and it's beautiful. Although we're sort of in, being in Northern California, it is colder, so you always want to bring a jacket. It's not as sunny Los Angeles and hot and whatnot. So, but yeah, it's great. And actually, I'm hoping tomorrow to head out that way with my big dog and enjoy the scenery. So
yeah. And you already told us you're in your studio, and maybe that means you're some kind of comic artist. What does this mean? What are you doing, especially? What are the big things we can know you for? You already mentioned the Charles M. Schulz Studio, the Peanuts. Maybe you can tell us something about you, your work.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'm a cartoonist, and I have worked for the Charles M. Schulz Studio for going on, as I said, 15 years or so. But prior to that, I, as an independent comic artist, for a very long time, I did a comic strip that I was trying to get syndicated into newspapers. And during that time, I actually transitioned to doing a graphic novel series called Kid Beowulf, which is, I'm going to show a image of it there. And this is the project that I've been working on for, boy, as long as I've been at the studio, if not longer. So I would say maybe 20 years. But those early years, I'm sure you're familiar talking to other artists where they're just trying to figure out like what the story is, how to draw it, how to publish it. So I have lots of old and crude drawings of these characters as I tried to figure out what the story was. This particular book came out in 2016, and it's full color. It's through Andrews McNeil, mm-hmm. and hope to get it translated into German someday. But I don't know how familiar audiences with the story of Beowulf, if that's a story that I know you have the famous hero Sigurd and Sigmund and the Song of the Nibelung and that mm-hmm. like. So Beowulf is sort of that ilk. And the long and the short of it was Beowulf was a big Viking. He went around killing monsters. And one of the monsters he's famous for killing was this man-eating monster named Grendel. And there are dragons and there are other Vikings and their big battles. And I read it in high school and I fell in love with the story. When I wanted to do comics, I kind of went back to that story because it always sort of had a hold on me. And instead of making Beowulf the big Viking, I turned him into a 12-year-old, and the monster Grendel, who's here in green, is his 12-year-old twin brother. So I sort of inverted the story, and essentially, it's an action adventure story, very much in the vein of Asterix, which I grew up reading.
Yeah,
and it follows Beowulf and Grendel across Europe and Asia, where they meet other heroes and get into other adventures. This is the second book in the series, called The Song of Roland, and it's based on the French epic, and has the King Charlemagne and all of his knights. And then the third book, the brothers go to Spain. And it's inspired by the epic poem El Cid. So each book is another country, another set of heroes, and Beowulf and Grendel sort of discover a little bit more about themselves and their place in the world. And it all leads back to the original epic poem that it's based on. But if people have read things like Asterix or Jeff Smith's Bone or Stan Sakai's Usagi Yojimbo, those are sort of the comics that I love reading that very much inspired by that. I try to make my comics similar to in that grand, you know, world building adventure based fun comics.
Great. I have 1,000 questions. So, first of all, the first thing I heard, I thought about when I had Kid Beowulf and I listened to a lot of podcasts, you already sent me some names and links and so on. First thing I thought about was an animated film about 10 years old or something like this. Do you know it? And is there any connection between this film and your comic series?
No, I think you're talking about Beowulf, the CGI movie that came out. Yeah, it was about 10 or 12 years ago by Robert Zemeckis, mm-hmm. who directed it. It's an interesting adaptation. And that's actually, you know, mind is an adaptation. And that's the wonderful thing about these old stories is that people, they're open to everybody to play with and to reinterpret and to reignite the imaginations of people who might not be familiar with them. So in the Beowulf community, of which there is one, there are lots of medievalists out there who study Beowulf or much, you know, people who have PhDs, which I do not. That particular movie was really derided. Nobody really liked that version. Although, believe it or not, Neil Gaiman did the script. And I thought he did an interesting job because they're in the epic poem, there are some storytelling challenges because it is so old and, it takes the course of Beowulf's full life. And like, how do you encapsulate that into like a 2-hour movie? One of the problems is between act, 2 and 3, there's like a 50-year gap. So after Beowulf in the original kills Grendel and in turn kills Grendel's mother, he goes back home and he's a king for like 50 years. Nothing really happens. And then a dragon comes out of nowhere and starts to terrorize his homeland. So he has to go out as an old man one more time and kill the dragon. And in lots of different adaptations, there's this, you know, people often like leave that part out or they're not really sure how to reconcile that. How do you connect those two things together? And what Neil Gaiman did, which I thought was really interesting, is that he connected all three, Grendel, his mother, and the dragon. And in fact, in that version, the dragon is Beowulf's son that he had with Grendel's mother, who was played by Angelina Jolie. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that. Okay. So anyway, she seduced him. And then 50 years later, the baby they had is this dragon that comes to terrorize the homeland. So I thought that was interesting because it was very similar to what I did with my story in that, you know, the familial connection of Beowulf and Grendel as twin brothers. And in my universe, the dragon is actually their grandfather. So I guess that's a long way of me saying, Neil Gaiman and I were on the same page. So
of course. Yeah. So it's just like a template or something.
I'm sorry.
And the whole Beowulf setting is just like a template or something. Can you say?
Yeah. Hmm? It's one of those stories that gets told and retold and adapted. Yeah. And so that's kind of my point of view is because I love that old story and I love Greek and Roman mythology and Norse mythology and all these old epics. And I feel like to a certain degree, they're kind of like the original superheroes. Mm-hmm. And so many young readers are just not familiar with these names. So it's also a way for me to play with these stories and then also introduce these old heroes to a whole readership that might not be familiar with them. And maybe if I'm lucky, get them inspired enough to read the original. For me, I love just digging into those stories and seeing all the connective tissue because in that world mythology and ultimately just trying to tell a good story.
Yeah, later on we will go into the characters. You will show us how to draw them. We will switch the camera and so on. And I'm very happy that we have the chance to see how you do it. But first of all, let's talk about the audience. You said your series is called Kid Beowulf, and you're talking about the audience. I think it's a younger audience. There's this kid spin. Maybe you can tell us who is the audience? Who is this series made for?
I would say it's for, in the States, we call them middle grade readers, which is sort of like 8-year-olds to 12-year-olds. That's kind of the target audience. But that's what the publishers and the booksellers use. Truthfully for me, it's like, it's an all ages audience. It's for the same audience that, when I grew up reading Asterix and Bone and as I said, Usagi Yojimbo, that's the same, the Saturday morning cartoon kind of approach. And at the same time, I've had adults read it and enjoy it. And people who teach Beowulf in college have used it in their course. So I think, like a lot of good material, it's my hope is that it transcends age. And if you want a good story, you can read it. Same way that, you know, you grew up reading Peanuts and we still read it today and we still enjoy it. So that's my hope at least. So.
Are there different levels of humor, of deepness, and so on for every age group? Can you say it like this?
Yeah, yeah, totally. For instance, one of the characters, I don't know if you can see him right there.
Yeah.
This little pig. So his name is Hama the Pig, and he is Beowulf and Grendel's stalwart companion. He's sort of like R2-D2. He follows them on all of their adventures, and he doesn't speak. But he's very smart. And he's a character that gives me an opportunity to do a lot of pantomime, for instance, if I want to just wordless panels. So a lot of action-driven stuff of like Hama getting out of, escaping from a pig pen or trying to, get away from a butcher or things like that. So, and that's all just visual humor. And I think that sort of thing appeals to a younger audience. At the same time, I'm doing sort of jokes and gags that are referencing the original Beowulf that really only perhaps a scholar would get. And then in between all that is just, like I said, that story that hits on all those action adventure fun cylinders for your average reader. So I'm trying to work on a number of levels.
Yeah.
For me, ultimately, it's just like writing a good story, getting better at my artwork, and hoping that it appeals to people.
Yeah, thank you. I had a chance to look at your artwork. You gave me a short excerpt of the German version, a private made indie German version. I really liked it. It's funny, just funny. I liked it, and I want to read more of it. And I think I'll get the chance somehow, somewhen. I don't know when. And I would like the English version too. I think loads of German comic readers do read international, especially English, the English language comics, English comics. Yeah, and I really hope there will be a chance to get them right here. But first of all, you already told us that your characters are moving to different different regions, like you talked about Paris, Rome, I'm not sure.
And yeah, actually, finished is Rome.
Is it possible that you can use your comics for teachers in schools, like historic lessons and so on?
Oh,
is there
a
chance to use them, and why?
No, that's a great point. At the end of every book, I do this kind of extended, what we call, it's kind of a glossary. And I have essays, character descriptions, and just sort of material that talks about the original source material. And that's intended for people who are curious about that source material and for teachers who might be using this in class. And we've done teachers' guides that have been used in classrooms where, if the classroom has read the book, you can spur discussion. And I've heard some really good feedback from those classes. Sometimes I'll go to a school and I'll give a talk and introduce them to, my work and the mythology. And I'll get back like a big stack of like great thank you letters all written from these students who enjoyed it. And the teachers talk about how they use it in their classroom. So there's definitely a component to that, that I intentionally kind of do, but again, it's not about making the stories lectures. Hopefully
it's entertainment.
First and foremost, it's entertainment, and then secondly is all that stuff that you can glean from it that might
I can imagine. It's a good starter for comic readers. You get to know the comic medium, for example, in the history lessons, and you get to know your series, and afterwards you start reading a lot of more stuff.
Actually, for me, so the first comic I remember being given, where I was like really aware of like, what is this? I want to know what this is. And I want to learn how to draw whatever this is, was Asterix the Legionary. Mm-hmm. And that was, Asterix is all about Gaul and fighting and Julius Caesar and the Romans. And so there was already like a historical component in Asterix that I found really appealing. Which I think kind of led me to the actual history of that time. And so that's always something that stuck with me. And there's, I try to infuse that in my own work. I'll tell you, a few years ago, I was lucky enough to visit Germany. Mm-hmm. And I went to the Frankfurt Book Fair. Mm-hmm. was there for Peanut stuff, where we met a lot of our publishers. And then I took some time and just traveled around different parts of Germany, made my way to Aachen, which was really cool because in the second book, The Song of Roland, as I said, Charlemagne was a big character in that. And in my research, you know, one of his places where he ruled from was Aachen. So it was really cool to go to Aachen to see all the different things that I was, you know, researching and drawing like right in front of me. That was so cool. I loved it. And that's what I love about, you know, when I go to Spain or France or Italy or Greece or other places, like the history, you guys are so lucky. The history is all there and it's right in front of you. You can, you know, I get so excited when I go to Europe because I love just everything that Europe is and comes from, and those mixing of cultures and the stories. And so that's what really inspires me. So whenever, anytime I can get a chance to go, I do, because I know that will be a direct influence on my work.
Yeah. And we are hoping to welcome you here pretty soon. Again, yes, of course, Europe is a place of history, but let's be honest, everywhere in the world is a lot of history, especially in the America too.
Yes.
But the good old Europe is maybe a good starter for historic stuff. Like,
if you like swords and, and, you know, castles and such, Europe's a good spot. So
we're lots of castles up here, especially in Germany. But right. Everywhere. How many books are already out there of your series?
Yeah, so I have there are three. You can see them all. This is book one, and then that's called The Bloodbound Oath. Book two is The Song of Roland. And book three is The Rise of El Cid. These are about, like, they're each about 200 pages or so.
And do you have a publisher, or do you publish it by your own?
This is published through an American publisher named Andrews McMeel.
Yeah.
And I would love to get it translated into German and every other language. Which is partly why I did that excerpt that I sent you that sort of showed, like, hey, it can work in another language. So always open to those conversations. And then the fourth book, I actually just finished that. And this is a kind of a galley. This one takes place, in Rome. It's actually about the founding of Rome. It's called The Tarpeian Rock. And it's about, twin brothers, Romulus and Remus. And then Beowulf and Grendel get thrown in the mix, in sort of a gladiator style mashup. And this one will be out in August. So I'm just sort of doing the final edits on that. That one I'm really pleased with. I think every book I get a little better, and it's just exciting to finally finish something you've been working on for a couple of years and get it out into the world.
Okay, please tell me, what's your secret? How does it work out? There are different times the stories are said happening. How does it work out? I think there are hundreds of years gap between different times. How does it work out?
So that's a great question. I guess the way that I rationalize it is the country that Beowulf and Grendel happen to be going to is whatever time period of that epic poetry. It's not as if they're going through like a literal portal that takes them to another time. They cross borders, and they happen to be, for instance, in France during the time of Charlemagne, because that's the source material, the Song of Roland. That's the time period that it happened. When they cross into Spain, they're moving into the time of El Cid, even though that took the difference between those is, as you say, a couple hundred years. So I don't really linger on it too much. It's really just like whatever country they're moving into happens to be the new place where they're diving into. And if as a reader you're okay that I've made Beowulf and Grendel twin brothers, and you know, there's a talking dragon and there's a pig, things I think people would be okay with.
It's fun, of course.
Yeah, for sure. And so, for instance, you know, as you say, now they're going to the founding of Rome, which is even, you know, maybe 500 years after, or I'm sure before what happened in book three. So yeah, it's a huge leap. Mm-hmm. But I don't dwell on it too much, and hopefully the reader shouldn't either. And I guess I would say the superstructure of the story is that for every country that Beowulf and Grendel go to, they get a little bit older and they slowly learn what their true destiny is, which is to fight each other, which is in the original epic poem. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the deeper that Grendel, who's the monster, goes into these mythological places, the more he becomes, he feels more like a monster and he can't really control himself. And for Beowulf, the more that he goes into these places, the more he realizes he's a strong fighter. He's really good at fighting monsters. And, oh, his brother happens to be one. What does that mean? And it's kind of the idea of like fighting against one's destiny and what is choice and fate and all those big mythological questions that I like to play with in the guise of an action adventure comic.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
As far as I can see it, you do the colors, you do the outlines, you do the story, you do everything. It seems like to be a one man show. Is it?
It's 90%. I do have a colorist.
His name is Flores,
and he does a marvelous job of bringing the book to life. For a long time, I did it in black and white. And then when I found a publisher, they wanted to do it in color. So I found Jose, and honestly, he really kind of just takes it up a notch and makes the art look even better from my chicken scratches. So he's really a big part of the team. He's based in the Philippines, believe it or not. And we've only ever worked through email. So what happens is I'll finish a bunch of pages. I'll scan them in the computer. I'll send them to Jose and he'll do like a first pass, just kind of like plopping in color. And then he'll send it back to me and I'll kind of tighten it up, you know, make sure everything's on model. And then I send that back to him. And then he sends me the final pages with the shading and the effects. And it's every time I get a page from him, it's like Christmas morning. Cause it's just like, oh, great. So
I really think so. It's a surprise. An everyday morning surprise.
Exactly.
You say you're scanning your pages and send the mails to him. Mm-hmm. That means you're not working digital.
No. I work. This is actually one of the pages.
Yeah.
And this is from the opening page of book four. Mm-hmm. You can hear I work on 11x14 Bristol board, and I don't know if you can see it. There's really I was really proud. This is a funny story. I was really proud of inking this page. This book, I wanted to use brush and pen nib, like my heroes, like Jeff Smith. And this page like took me a couple hours. And like I sit back and I look at it, and I make a real rookie move, and the bottle of ink spilled on the page. I just spent like hours doing it, so I had to like go and put in the whiteout and fix it. But I do as much as on the page as possible. And then I scan it into the computer, clean it up. And then so colors and the word balloons are all done digitally in Photoshop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I have a lot of friends who use Cintiq or even their iPads, Procreate, to draw.
Yeah.
And for me, it's a lot of this, I mean, if you can't tell, I love like old classic stuff. So all of my heroes drew on paper. It's hard enough to get it to look good on paper. I can't imagine trying to get it to draw on glass. I've tried it before. It just doesn't work for me. So,
yeah, okay.
And it's really thrilling when you get like a massive stack of Bristol board that shows the work that you've done as opposed to like little pixels. Yeah,
I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
In one of the podcasts I listened to, you were talking about web comics and doing things online and social media and so on. And I think the podcast was some years old. How does it work out? Are you how's your Instagram account right now?
I don't think it's much better than it was. I encourage all of your listeners and to follow me if they'd like.
Of course.
And I'm at Lex Fajardo Art both Twitter and Instagram. And I post a few times a week, you know, just showing process stuff. And that's been fun. I try not to take the social media too seriously. It's just, it's, you know, for some people it works really well, and for others it's just a frustrating thing. So for me, it's frustrating. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do also do a web comic. So your readers can read it online. And on my website, kidbeowulf.com, I have links. I actually just started to post the story on Webtoon. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have Webtoon, and that's interesting because it's ideal for a mobile device. So you can just sort of scroll mm-hmm. up. And that's been interesting because I've had to basically cut up the comic because, you know, it's made for, as I showed you, it's a, you know, a larger format. So I have to make sure it fits nicely on a screen. So I'm always just trying to get the book out there, the whether it's online or in book form or what have you, because you can always get more readers.
And can we support you and your work on Patreon or something?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. I also have a Patreon page.
Yeah.
I think if you were to search my name, it would come up. Again, Lex or Alexis Fajardo. And that's actually where I released book four, this one, all online for my Patreon backers. Mm-hmm. So they got a sneak peek of the book. And I did weekly updates through 2020. And it's all archived there. And so that's
great. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, so all of my new material, I kind of show exclusively on Patreon. It's really good to have those supporters because, you know, making comics takes a long time. And it's hard, as much fun as it is, it's hard to do good comics, or any comics, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Just like, it's just a challenging thing. So when you have fans who support your work, and are engaged and want to see you succeed, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay, before we get back to your characters in Kid Beowulf, because you will switch the camera, first of all, let's have a little part and talk about Charles M. Schulz, the studio, and the Peanuts. And I think there are lots of people out there, especially from the Comic Yada, that of course know everything about the Peanuts, but to be honest, I don't know that much. We have in Germany new comics of the Peanuts. I think the newest stuff is released here on a German publisher called Cross Cult, and I'm not that familiar with their actual published books, but maybe you can tell us something about the whole business behind it, because I'm not familiar with the studio idea, with the Charles M. Schulz business. What is it? How does it work out? And he's the inventor of the Peanuts, isn't he? Wasn't he?
Yeah. Charles M. Schulz, creator and cartoonist of the comic strip Peanuts. Mm-hmm. He started it in 1950, and he did it for 50 years. The last strip was published in 2000. He was the only person to write, draw, ink the comic strip. It follows the adventures of Snoopy, who is the dog, and his best friend Charlie Brown, and they're kind of misfit characters in a very American suburban world of, you know, post-war America. Mm-hmm. And it's a really interesting chronicle because it's kind of a story about Schulz. He would always talk about, if you wanted to get to know him as a person, mm-hmm. just read the comic strip, because he put everything that he was in those characters, his anxieties, mm-hmm. His hopes, his failures, they all existed in that comic strip. And so, you know, you could read the comic from 1950, to 2000, which I think that tally is like 17,000 odd strips, somewhere in that neighborhood. And you get a sense of who the man was. And I've been fortunate enough to love Peanuts since I was a kid. Like when I was eating my Cheerios, I would read Peanuts in the newspaper. And one of the reasons I wanted to be a cartoonist was because I love Snoopy and Charlie Brown. Those were like my first drawings.
Yeah.
So in America, Snoopy and Charlie Brown and Lucy and Linus and all of them, they're like their household names. So it's really exciting to hear that in Germany, they're very popular too, and actually across the world. So what happened was that, you know, Charles M. Schulz did this really popular comic strip, and it kind of took on a life of its own because, you know, when it became really popular, I would say like in the early 60s, people wanted to have t-shirts with Charlie Brown. They wanted to have mugs with Snoopy. You know, they had been doing books for a little while, and those books were very popular. But suddenly there was this appetite to have Snoopy on all kinds of different things. This is actually a pencil sharpener from Japan.
Uh-huh.
Snoopy on there. This is a ruler that I also have.
Oh, good.
I have a lot of, you can tell, I have a lot of stationary stuff. Uh-huh. There's Snoopy there. So, you know, out of the popularity of the strip grew an appetite for the product because, you know, we're all comic fans. I mean, you're wearing a Batman baseball cap. We love to sort of have the things of the characters we love to own a little piece of them. So Schulz, his real focus was the comic strip. He just wanted to do his work. But he's also a good businessman, and he knows that if there's a popularity, if there's a desire for this, well, let's figure out how to do it the best way. So he created a studio called Creative Associates. This came about, like, I think 1970 or so, where he had a staff that basically would work with the Syndicate, which was based in New York. And the Syndicate was basically the company that sold the comic strip to all the different newspapers. And they also made business deals for t-shirts and mugs and whatnot. And he really wanted to make sure that whatever had Snoopy or Charlie Brown on it looked really good. Because he took pride in his work and he doesn't want to make cheap stuff. So he put together a studio that's based here in Santa Rosa. And their prime objective was to ensure the integrity of the comic strip and his characters as it was transmogrified, as it was transformed into these other products. And so that's what the studio did. And actually, when Charles M. Schulz passed away in 2000, here's a crazy story. So Schulz's nickname is Sparky. Mm-hmm. All his best friends call him Sparky. Actually, we at the studio call him Sparky because, you know, that's just sort of the vernacular. I was never lucky enough to meet the man, but you read all his work and you work with it day in, day out. You just sort of becomes part of your vocabulary. So, and he was named Sparky because at 2 days old, an uncle, when he was first introduced to his nephew, said, "Oh, he looks like Sparkplug from this comic strip called Barney Google." And Sparkplug was the name of this racehorse. And it was really popular, like in 1922 when Schulz was born. And so he was nicknamed after a comic strip character. And throughout Schulz's life, the one thing he loved more than anything were comic strips. He would read them with his father. He knew from the get-go he wanted to be a cartoonist. He's nicknamed after a comic strip. So that's sort of something he carried with him his entire life. And on the day that his last comic strip was published, February 13th, 2000, He had actually by that point already said that he was going to retire because his health was failing. He couldn't continue to do the strip. So the last strip was slated to run it was going to be a Sunday. And it ran on February 13th. And he died in his sleep the day that his final strip went. I mean, if that is, you couldn't write a story that anyone would believe. But I think it reinforces the idea that this was a fellow who was devoted to his work. Like, that was his lifeblood. And so it's one of those things, just working at the studio, that I always kind of marvel at. And I started at the studio in 2007. And my purview there is really working with publishing, with publications. As you said, that there's Peanuts in Germany. We have publishers in France and Spain, all across the world, Japan. Mm-hmm. And they're always like, you know, publishing different editions of Peanuts. So one of my jobs is to work with those publishers to make sure that they do beautiful editions of the book. And and I have some other responsibilities, but I'm really lucky that I get to work with, you know, that printed material.
Yeah.
And I get to, you know, as a cartoonist myself, that's the thing I love the most, is just like digging into all the stuff that he created. And so the publisher that you mentioned, Cross Cult, we've been working with them for a couple of years, and they recently took on the task of adapting some of the comic book work that we've done. So this is a comic book that the studio put together through Boom Studios. Mm-hmm. They're based in Los Angeles, and these are just a couple of the issues. And so what we did for about 10 years or so, we would take a lot of Schultz's stories and adapt them for more of a comic book audience. And we would always put in original Schultz material too. But we would just sort of expand on some of his different storylines, kind of working them into the comic book page. Yeah. And so those were collected, and Cross Cult has been publishing those collections. They've also been publishing, I don't know if you've seen this one, but it's a graphic novel adaptation of animated movie, Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown. This mm-hmm. one came out a couple of years ago. Beautiful artwork.
Yeah.
It's started by Robert Pope, who is also going to be a guest, virtual guest for Comicade. And so one of my jobs is to work with people like Robert and work with the writer who was part of our studio, Jason Cooper, and kind of come up with different storylines featuring the Peanuts characters. This is one that we came out with last year called Snoopy, the Beagle of Mars. And in this one, this is really fun because, you know, Snoopy crash lands on what he thinks is Mars. And it's a really fun story. And, you know, Charlie Brown, the gang, is in there too.
But this one isn't based on an original strip from Charles, isn't it? From
Sparky. This is an original story that Jason came up with.
Okay.
So that's the other thing. It's like we adapt, and then some of the original stuff from the comic strips, and then in cases where we have a really strong story, we'll create something new. And the third book, I don't have a preview of it, but that'll be out this spring. It's called Scotland Bound Charlie Brown. Mm-hmm. And that's written by Jason Cooper with art by Robert Pope. And that one's really interesting because it's based on an old storyboard that Schultz did with his animation director, Bill Melendez, mm-hmm. back like in the late 90s. So we had these storyboards at the office, and they never materialized into an animated film. But we've often thought like, oh, it'd be kind of cool, like if we could adapt that into a graphic novel, kind of like get the story out there. So that's what we did. And it's really fun. And Charlie Brown and Snoopy and Schroeder and Linus and Lucy end up going to Scotland. Hijinks ensue. So that'll be out this spring, and probably the translated edition from Cross Cult hopefully will be out, you know, within the year. So
that's very interesting that there are so many differences. For example, to Calvin and Hobbes, I know it's not even possible to get some official merch from it, but the Peanuts do have lots of stuff as far as I can see. Are there still daily or weekly strips from the Peanuts, or do we have the bigger ones, the comics, the graphic novels, and so on?
No, the strip is still being published. It's all reprints. You know, one of the mandates, so to speak, when Schultz passed away, is that nobody would do the comic strip anymore. The 4-panel comic strip like this. But there was the window of doing comic book adaptations like this. It's a fine line, obviously, but part of the idea was to, you know, try this publishing program to get Peanuts back into kids' hands again. But the comic strip itself, that's sort of sacrosanct, and it is available to read online at Peanuts.com and in the newspapers and also in these books. I think you can actually follow, I think it's at Snoopy Grahams on Instagram and at Snoopy on Twitter. And we'll always like post different snippets of art. So, and it's, you know, we just launched the Snoopy Show on Apple Plus.
Yeah.
Which is a new animated series featuring Snoopy.
Two ones, aren't they? Two shows. Snoopy in Space or something, yeah. And usual show.
Yeah, so Snoopy in Space is sort of like a mini series, and it has kind of an educational bent. So the idea was Peanuts has had a long relationship with NASA. And for all the new things that NASA is doing, going to Mars, like the Mars rover, things like that, they wanted to just kind of get kids excited about science again. So we did this, you know, I think it's like a 6-part mini series of Snoopy in Space. And then the Snoopy Show just launched a couple months ago. And that's more of a traditional, you know, the kids are in the neighborhood, and very similar to the original animated material from the 60s.
So Sparky would love the modern graphic novels and modern comics, would he?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, you know, what's interesting is that he loved comics. Granted, like I'm only speaking from what I've learned from what I've read about him, but you know, he wasn't afraid of innovation. He wasn't, you know, that's the thing. Like he wanted to fulfill the desires of his fan base and like create, you know, the opportunities to have a Snoopy t-shirt or a book. Like I think he was open to different ideas. So the graphic novels, I think he'd get a kick out of. He'd probably maybe want to draw them himself. I don't know. But, you know, one thing we always joke about, you know, like for these books, it takes 10 of us to do what one man did, you know?
Yeah, so, yeah, I get it.
we never feel like we can ever do anything better because he did it the best. And so we just want to do as good a job as we can and, you know, get people turned on to Peanuts and read the original source material because it is so good. It is so fun. You know, before we started to chat, I was leafing through one of these old comic books and I came across this Sunday strip and just sort of like reading them and reminding myself of just how good they are. And I don't know how many baseball fans there are in Germany, but let me see if I can find it. The strip is here. It is. So it's a Sunday strip.
Yeah.
And it's Lucy on the ball field and she's going up to Charlie Brown and she said, "Hey, Charlie Brown, some kid left his glove on the baseball field. We should try and get it back to him. He was really smart. He put his name in the baseball glove. See, his name is Willie Mays." And she's going on like, I don't know about if I've met Willie. I'm not familiar with his name. Do you know who Willie Mays is?" And then Charlie Brown's like, "Look in your glove. There's a name in your glove." And she looks at her glove and it says Babe Ruth. And she says, "Yeah, I don't know Babe Ruth either." Like, so it's just, you know,
yeah, one of these
very funny comics that, you know, I've read them all, but I can always reread them because they're just always so funny. And he was just such a good writer. Like that only works with Lucy and Charlie Brown, because Lucy is just, she's a horrible baseball player and she just doesn't really care to be there. And you can sort of just get a sense of like, she doesn't even know who some of the best baseball players are. So it's really just fun. I'm really lucky and fortunate to be associated with the Schultz Studio and get to like read these comics and work with them every day.
So, I'm not that much into the strips game, but are comic strips still a thing in US America?
Yeah, that's a great question. They're on. Okay, comic strips and newspapers, the way that we're familiar with them for our generation, are not. Mm-hmm. They're sort of on the. They're kind of a dying art form. But that's to say, in newspapers, I have a lot of friends who are cartoonists. But, you know, the advent of social media, Instagram, Twitter, perfect venue for a comic strip. Web comics are huge. But I think the challenge nowadays is to find the audience the way that you could with a newspaper.
Yeah, okay.
And there have been a lot of cartoonists who are very successful at that. Those ones that we mentioned before who are like really good at Instagram, of which I'm not.
Yeah.
They can make a living from that. And more power to them. You know, it's great.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Two questions left before we switch camera. First of all, and I had listened to one of these, already talking about these podcasts, but there was one very interesting fact about a wall of strips inside the studio. Maybe you could tell us something about the wall, something we can walk through, a museum or something like this. What is it? Can you tell us something about it?
Are you talking about, was it at the museum, perhaps?
Yeah, maybe like a
wall of strips.
As far as I imagine it, and from the podcast, it was a wall full of the original strips.
So, what is it? So here in Santa Rosa, there's a studio that I work out of, and there's also the Charles M. Schulz Museum, which was built. I think it maybe early 2000s. It was built, and that's the place where fans of Peanuts can go and see Schulz's original artwork on display. And they do a lot of exhibitions throughout the year. We actually opened Snoopy Museum Tokyo, which is kind of like an official sister museum in Tokyo, Japan, that has similar exhibitions. They're both beautiful places. What's really cool is when you walk into the museum here in Santa Rosa, you walk into what's called the Great Hall. And at the far end of the hall is this massive, I think it's like a 50-foot wall, top to bottom, maybe even taller. And there's a mosaic of Charlie Brown kicking the football being held by Lucy, that famous kind of image of him running to kick it. And it looks like it's pixelated when you like, as if it were like a 8-bit art. But as you get closer, you realize that this mosaic is made out of thousands of small comic strips that have been printed on ceramic tiles. And this Japanese artist, basically created a mosaic of all these strips. And out of that strip, you can see that image. So that's really cool. What's even crazier is that one wall represents one decade of comic strips.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're to take Schulz's whole output, you know, the 5 decades that he worked on Peanuts, it'd be 5 of those giant walls. You know, that's like how much stuff he produced. And that's what's always startling to me is that he, you know, every day he went to a studio and he did another comic strip. And you know, he did so many.
Yeah.
Cover up, you know, giant wall of comics. So it's just amazing, his output and his dedication.
Is the museum still opened up, actually? Is the for your audience, can we go there?
Well, actually, you can do, they've been starting to do virtual online tours. So I would check out schulzmuseum.org. And you can kind of see the museum. If you're not lucky enough to visit in person, you can see it online, and it will be opening up shortly once we get through COVID. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place. I mean, if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, it's definitely worth a pilgrimage just an hour north to check it out. And because I think comic fans will really love it. I remember actually, as I said before, when I went to Frankfurt and then Aachen, I made a detour to the Hergé Museum in Belgium. And it's a beautiful place. And I'm a big fan of Tintin. And it reminded me a lot of the Schulz Museum. Because it has that same kind of quality where you can just kind of walk into the comic strip world that they created. So I highly recommend it. If you're a fan of Peanuts, it's worth going there.
Great. I'm absolutely sure we will do. And I will do. So last question to the studio work. I'm here at the official blog of thepeanutsstudio.com. And they say you're the editorial director. Does this mean you're the head of everything? Maybe this question is a bit late, but tell me, what's exactly your job there?
Yeah. So in terms of publishing, that means, I'm sort of... my eyeballs go on every piece of publishing that's produced, whether it's here in the States or where you guys are in Germany or off in Japan, I just review all those things and make sure that they're done well. And I'm lucky enough to work with a lot of great publishers across the world creating Peanuts books. I have another thing to show you guys, which we're really proud of. This book came out earlier this year.
Ooh.
Called The Peanuts Book. And there actually is a German edition of this available. Mm-hmm. This is a book that I got to work on with great writer, and it's kind of just a walk through Peanuts, and you know, it gives you character you know, biographies and a look at Schultz's work, how he created sort of some of the iconic things. There's a really fun spread here. I can see if I can find it. Since we're talking about his workspace, this is his studio workspace. And what's cool is the museum recreated this area. So you could go to the museum and see a recreation of Schultz's studio.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a great look at just how he created Peanuts. I have another spread I think is really interesting to share. If I can find it. We talked about all those strips and, you know, how he did them all daily. Where is it? We put this spread in the book, which is great because you just see me flipping through pages, but I do have it.
This is not the one you won the Eisner Award for, is it? Isn't it? It's another one for celebrating Snoopy in 2018. Do you have this one there too?
This one is, I don't know. I think we submitted this one for an Eisner. I think it's definitely mm-hmm. worth an Eisner. We put a lot of work into this one. And where is that page? Now it's not going to be worth it if I can't find it. I know it's in here. Sorry. The one that won the Eisner Award I have here too. And yeah, this is really fun for your viewers.
Like a screensaver.
Right. Exactly. Oh, here it is. Okay. So we did this spread. It's called From the Drawing Board. I don't know if you can see that, but it kind of gives you an idea. This is a close approximation of how large Schultz drew. So this double page spread, the comic strip is actually a little bigger, but what's cool is that this is a scan from the museum and you can kind of get some of the detail. You can see the paste up, you can see some of the pencil lines below it. This book sort of has that kind of behind the scenes stuff to it that I think is really, again, if you're a big Peanuts fan, it's worth it to you. And the book you mentioned before, the one that did win the Eisner Award, was this one.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Celebrating Snoopy, and it came out in 2018, and it's
pretty heavy.
Yeah. It makes a really good doorstop.
Yeah.
And this one is just a collection of strips. And we worked on this with the whole studio. So, you know, some of my colleagues, we just kind of read through the entire library and chose the best of Snoopy, so to speak, from 1950 all the way to 2000. And the stuff that, so they're sort of collating all that material. And then the stuff that I'm really particularly proud of are these sort of opening chapter essays that kind of dig into a lot of the stuff we've talked about. You know, Schultz's craft, his thought process, his artwork.
Did you write them?
Yeah. So this is the material that I wrote. And this was really fun to write because it kind of encapsulated just my own take on mm-hmm. the work. And hopefully when you read this and then you read the other material, it's enlightening and you can get, you know, some more insight into Peanuts. So Yeah, this one for best archival collection. And it was a big studio win because everybody really chipped in and did their best work on this. And like I said, it's super thick and heavy. So,
yeah, great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for showing us all this very interesting stuff. Now I think this is the moment we can go directly to your drawing board and maybe we can change the camera. You have got another device on your right. And now you can activate it. And I think we can go back to Kid Beowulf, don't we?
Yeah. Let me turn off my camera. Or would you like me to keep mine on?
No, we can see you on the other one too. I'm just hoping that we see this camera in the video. But I'm sure it will. I will turn off my camera just to be sure we just see the right camera. Maybe you can turn off your second camera too? Or the first camera? Can you say something, please? There you are, yeah.
Okay, sorry about that.
Okay, what do you want to show us? Maybe some character stuff or your working on your comic series. Tell me, what will you show us?
Yeah, so hang on. Had to get the glare out so you can see that. Okay, so I just wanted to show you can hear me okay?
I can hear you and I can see the second camera. It's perfect.
Okay, great. So these are some pages from the new book that I just finished. I thought I'm a process junkie and you might have viewers out there who love to see how comics are made too. So I thought I would just like walk through just how I draw those pages. So this is the opening to book 4. And I draw everything on 11x14 Bristol board. You can see the red pencil beneath. A lot of cartoonists and animators will use different colored pencils, usually blue or red. I'm going to see if I can find, or I don't have it with me. But I used red on this one. And what happens is once I ink the page, and I ink with different pens. This is one of my favorite Japanese brush pens. Mm-hmm. It's called, I think the only English word on here is zebra. So it's a zebra pen. I have a couple of these different ones. There are no English words on this one, but they're beautiful. They're really nice pen nibs. So I like to use those. And I also use Winsor Newton sable haired brush, which all of my heroes uses. Jeff Smith uses this, Walt Kelly uses this. These are really hard to master. So I'm still trying to figure it out. It'll take all my life. But it's, I don't know if you've talked to other creators, but the idea of inking is so much fun because, you know, the drawing is really hard to do, like the blocking, you know, and where do you put the balloons? So when I get through all of that, when I scratch out the pacing and the spacing, then I can spend time and just put on a podcast and start to ink. Mm-hmm. And that's my favorite part. So these are just sort of a glimpse of some of those pages and what they look like. The opening of this story, as you can see here, Beowulf and Grendel, they're in these fighting pits in ancient Rome. And part of their journey is to become these great gladiators. And so here this is the opening scene where you can see that they're pretty good at fighting.
Do you can get us any closer? I think we can see most of it, but it's not that sharp. The other camera was a bit sharper. I think we can see the most of it. Okay.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this was just a fun sequence to put together. And so just a glimpse of just how some of those pages are done. Let me see if I can get a little closer. And then I thought maybe I would just draw some of the characters.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see if this shows up on the camera. So I'm going to draw Beowulf. I start everything with an underdrawing. And I'm going to do this really quickly so you guys can...
You're working with your pencil. Lots of other artists are working with the blue pencils. You aren't, are you?
I normally do, but for the camera, I'm just going to use graphite because I think it shows a little bit better. So you can see here's a really rough outline. That's going to be his head, torso, legs, arms, and he's going to be waving to the camera. I'll give him his sword too. So actually what I'm going to do is I'm going to go right to pen and we'll see if this. And I'm sure probably a lot of your astute comic fan podcast listeners will see that where my influences come from. As I said, I was a big fan of Asterix. Mm-hmm. I really liked Jeff Smith's Bone and then, you know, Charles Schulz and Peanuts.
Do you miss all the comic events, all the fairs, all the live drawings?
For sure. It's interesting because I think the pandemic, you know, living through COVID, myself and so many of my cartoonist friends, we're inherently introverts. Mm-hmm. You know, we like to be in our studios, drawing, putting on our headphones and just, you know, diving in. But those events, those comic events and conventions, that's the time where we get to see each other. We get to crawl out of our caves and say hello. And we need those to keep our sanity. So
to see the sun again.
Exactly. Yeah. So yes, I'm definitely looking forward to going back on the road, seeing my friends, meeting my fans, and you know, just saying, you know, welcome back. It's nice to see him again. And especially this year, because book four will be coming out later this summer. So I am hoping that, you know, maybe by the time that rolls around, we'll be back to somewhat normal.
What was your last event, coming event?
There's Beowulf, and you can see.
Oh, yeah.
Really quick sketch. He's going to say one of his favorite phrases is "Holy Loki," and Loki is, of course, the Norse god of mischief.
Yeah, yeah.
My last comic event. That's a good question. I think it was. It might have been Comic Con, actually.
Mm-hmm. New York or San Diego.
Yeah, San Diego Comic Con. Yeah. Which. Great. If you have the opportunity to go to Comic-Con, I highly recommend it. It's kind of a once in a lifetime thing to go to. It's massive and just loads of fun because I get to see.
Yeah, as far as I can see it, there's never if you are there, there's never enough time to see everything you want to see.
No.
There's so much stuff, so much people, so much comic stuff, especially.
Yeah, and they do a really good job. I mean, yeah, there's lots of Hollywood stuff.
Yeah,
but there is, which is exciting. All those panels, but they also do a really good job. So here I've just sketched out Hama the Pig.
Wow,
and we'll ink him in. But what's nice about Comic-Con is that they also do a really good job of keeping it focused on comics. Mm-hmm. And not too many conventions these days do that well enough. You know, it's always about the celebrities and the panels and, you know, walking down Artist Alley or Small Press is my favorite thing to do when I go to San Diego Comic-Con. And I have friends who I used to exhibit there pretty regularly. Now I sort of just go as a fan. But I still have friends who are, you know, in the trenches, selling their books at Comic-Con, and it's great to see them. And I've found that for my material, as much as I love comic conventions, I do a little better at like library shows or teacher conventions, just because I think the material that I do is suited to that. Mm-hmm. But every now and then I make sure to just go to the show for fun, because
I didn't get that.
There's Siri. She wanted to be part of the conversation too.
Hi Siri. Right.
Anyway, so there's Hama and there's Beowulf. And do we have time for I can squeeze Grendel in there if you think we have time.
Oh yeah, okay. That's
okay. He's not gonna be exactly proportional because he's a little taller than Beowulf, but I've run out of paper here, so he's gonna do my best to squeeze him in.
I'm so jealous of your talent.
That's nice of you to say. I will say, this is like, it's just like years and years of just drawing. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, being in school and drawing in the margins of my notebooks and scraps of paper and whatnot. So,
do you have any advice for starters, for starting illustrators?
Well, maybe just that, just, you know, draw all the time. You know, there's nothing wrong if you have particular artists who you're a big fan of. Like, for instance, if you love Jim Lee's work, mm-hmm. It's okay to look and copy some of those styles. And because what you'll do is you'll learn just different techniques from those artists and what worked, what didn't, and then what works for you and what doesn't as you try to adapt those styles. Because eventually you'll arrive at a style that works for you, that conveys the best story and character that you're interested in telling those stories about. So, you know, again, I grew up reading Asterix in my early comics. Very much have an Asterix influence, and it took me a while to sort of learn to shed those influences and just kind of figure out how to draw my own way. But that's not to say that I didn't learn a lot from seeing how those masters did it. I think there's definitely a fear that people don't, you know, they don't want to copy, and I totally get that. But you also learn by doing and by emulating those styles that you're influenced by.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
I think all the great comic book artists would say like they were influenced by Jack Kirby, and they took mm-hmm. those great things that Kirby did and injected them into their own work.
Same like with dots.
What's that?
Like dots.
Oh my gosh, the Kirby.
Yeah.
That's why those guys are the masters, you know. We can't be as good as the masters, but we can certainly try to emulate them. So there's Grendel.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Should I switch the camera?
I'm pretty sure lots of the people here on Comic Yarde Mal Anders would really like to get this piece of art. And is there any chance to get any of your original art? Do you sell it?
Yeah, actually, I'm gonna turn this one off and turn this one on.
Yeah.
Let me see if you're there. Okay. So, yes, I on my website, kidbeowulf.com, there's an area where you can go and order books. And in that store, I also sell sketches, you know, like this. I don't sell any original pages.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't quite figured out if I want to do that yet. I mean, I have a stack of them. I have like, you know, pages of original art, but maybe someday I'll sell them. I don't know. For now, I like to do little character sketches and I have them for sale. I could do requests too. So if somebody wanted a specific character, mm-hmm. I would do it. Kind of like the idea of those comic shows where you go out to Artist Alley and you want a commission. So I do those as well.
All right. So the last question for today is the question for recommendations. Do you have any recommendations for books, comics, movies, or whatever, or especially maybe podcasts or something like this? Do you have any recommendations for the reading audience and listening audience out there?
Well, in terms of podcasts, if you're not tired of listening to me right now and you want to listen to more, you can go to, and if you want to listen to more about Peanuts and Charles Schulz, there's a great podcast I recommend called Blockhead. And a friend of mine hosts that, and he talks about Schulz's influence on comic strips, and that's a really fun podcast. I've been a guest on there. Another fun podcast I like to listen to that I've been a guest on, but I really enjoy when I'm drawing, because there are these two guys who are also cartoonists, and they just talk about craft and how to get better at it, and whether you're making web comics or graphic novels or what have you, they always offer really good advice. And that one's called Comic Lab, mm-hmm. L-A-B. Those are both on Apple iTunes or you know, other podcast places. So I highly recommend those. And in terms of books, oh man, this is where I always get tripped up, because there are so many books to recommend. Let me see, and I'm kind of far away from my bookshelf. Well, I mentioned it again, they're actually right here at my side, because I always like to look at them for inspiration, but
yeah, Bowen, of course. Yeah. Good one.
This one too is so much fun. This is The Great Cow Race. And these are his original black and white versions. But I mean, if you want to learn how to be a good cartoonist, just read anything Jeff Smith does, and you'll have a leg up. Another fun one that I had right here was Asterix. This one's Asterix in Spain. They have so many. They actually have been doing new editions too, mm-hmm. With a new creative team, which I've been interested to see. And they're doing a really good job. It's kind of similar to what we've been doing with Peanuts, in that you have the, you know, the original creators are no longer with us.
Yeah.
But carrying on. So I've enjoyed rereading Asterix. And then, oh, hang on. I have a great comic I'll show you.
Das ist der Moment, wo wir mal in den Hintergrund gucken können. Was hat der Künstler bei sich im Regal stehen?
All right. So this one you could probably find. This is in French.
Ah.
I found the English version on Comixology. They recently translated it. I think it's called The Swordsman in English. But this beautiful book by Xavier Dorison and Joël Parnot, I think. I hope I'm not mispronouncing his name. And granted, this is all in French, so I had to download the English versions to understand. But, I mean, it's just beautiful stuff. Just amazing. And I think the storyline is just like this old master of arms, this guy right here, who has to basically bodyguard this kid who has a message for the king, and they're, you know, tracked through snow and these beautiful.
Yeah.
I've been playing a lot of Assassin's Creed Valhalla recently.
Oh.
So this book kind of transports me into that
fits
landscape.
Perfectly.
It's just perfect. Yeah, it's beautiful. So those are some books I would recommend. And yeah, I mean, if any of your readers are interested in learning where they can find my own, there's my website. And then book four, as I said, comes out later this year. And I might be doing a Kickstarter for it. I don't know. We'll figure out how to get people across the world that, you know, the option to pre-order the book. So, but I'm excited to get that out there and then keep doing more stories.
Great. And we are very looking forward for these stories. We hope we will see you soon here again in Germany. I hope we will get maybe a German version of Kid Beowulf. This would be great. And Lex, I really, really thank you for your time, for this interview. I just hope we can do something like this again. Maybe have a drink or something like this. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Mania. This was a lot of fun. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sehr geehrte Damen und Herren, wertes Publikum, liebe Hörende, vielen Dank für eure Aufmerksamkeit und Zeit. Ich hoffe sehr, euch hat gefallen, was ihr gerade gehört habt. Wir, die Redaktion des Telestammtisch, betreiben ein semi-professionelles Podcast-Projekt zum Selbstmitmachen. Also meldet euch bei uns, wir beißen auf. Außerdem freuen wir uns immer über Feedback via Social Media und E-Mail sowie euren finanziellen Support. Ebenso frohlocken wir förmliche Bewertungen auf den gängigen Podcast-Plattformen. Wer möchte, darf uns gern immer und überall empfehlen. Alle relevanten Links findet ihr in den Shownotes. Vielen Dank und bis zum nächsten Mal. Euer Andi.